you think is necessary is something that if you don't do, the whole DA will collapse tomorrow. Just to demonstrate that, okay, all right. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I would request that we do quickly the preliminary communication, just introducing ourselves to the candidate. Am I correct, sir, that you are Mr. Johannes Theodora? Theodora Klassen. Is that yourself? Thank you very much. My name is Mwondli Gungubele. The chair of the portfolio committee will be chairing the interview. Next honorable member.
Good morning, Mr. Klassen. My name is Member Gillian. I'm the co-chairperson.
Good morning, Mr. Klassen. My name is Dikang Stock. I'm a member of this subcommittee. Thanks.
Good morning, Mr. Klassen. My name is Bridget Matlango. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development.
Goedemorgen, Mr. Klassen. Ik is Letitia Arias. Ik heb lid van de Portfolio Committee, representing the EFF.
Good morning. I'm Dalmain Christians. I'm a member of the NCOP, also Social Cluster.
Good morning, Mr. Klassen. My name is Otto Madeka. I'm a member of a subcommittee.
Thank you very much. Mr. Klassen, we have called you for this interview, which you were shortlisted based on the record of your CV. Now we want to give you an opportunity to engage with the interview panel, sell yourself to the best of your capability, relax. At the end, we'll allow you to ask whatever questions you have. That's going to be the story. We will tell you the time you have for each question, and then you'll do your best within that time. As I'm talking to you now, it's 9 o'clock, when we're supposed to start. The first question comes from the chairperson, myself, asking you to tell us a bit about yourself and why you want to commit part of your time and energy to serve this board, and tell us if you get the chance to be appointed, what will you do? At 3 minutes and a quarter, your time ends. I'm listening to you.
It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. I realize it's no small thing for me to be even shortlisted. Briefly, my background, I grew up near Pretoria, and as a young man I've been exposed to drugs myself, and some of the encounters I deeply regret today, but I found help, and that I suppose is part of the passion that I have to help other young people. Today I work for an organization called Doctors for Life International. Although I'm not a medical doctor myself, it was one of my aspiring dreams to become a medical doctor. And so that's why I'm very thankful for this opportunity to be, for the last 20 years, have been able to work with Doctors for Life. I started with Doctors for Life in 2000 and have been with them ever since. Part of my portfolio... Excuse me? Doctors for Life. Doctors for Life International, yes. It's a medical organization, and one of our main principles is sound science in the medical profession. And at the risk of not going over my 3 minutes, let me say that at the outset, that is part of my and our desire, is to bring sound science into the debate of substance abuse in South Africa. We feel at this stage largely science has been ignored. I've been involved with the CDA meetings, and I was the chairperson for I think almost 10 years of KZN, the KZN Substance Abuse Forum. And what we've seen over time is that public opinion was more driven on some of the issues than science. Let me take one example, that we're all well aware of, and that is the legalization of Dacha. It's very much spoken about, but we feel science has been ignored. And if I can just say this, like one of our good friends, Professor Bertha Madras, she is from Harvard University, said, you know, unfortunately science paid the price when public opinion started weighing in on the legalization of Dacha, and science was the victim. And no, but ironically today with COVID-19, you will never allow public opinion to weigh in on things like a vaccine for COVID-19. It just doesn't make sense. You won't allow the people of the country to decide whether they like the vaccine or not. It's going to be science that determines whether it's effective or not. So in a nutshell, that is the desire. As I sit here, I'm not sitting here on my own authority or my own doing alone. I've made it very clear in my submission, in my nomination to... as a CDA member, that I will represent our doctors. We have about 1,500 medical doctors that are members of Doctors for Life. And as I sit here, I represent them and the organization. So when I come to the table, I bring their expertise here and their research.
Thank you, Chair. The Central Drug Authority was established by an Act of Parliament. Which Act is that? And if you could just let us know which Act is that and what does it seek to achieve?
The exact Act. I do know that it was an Act. I don't know the exact name of the Act. One of the roles of the CDA is to develop the National Drug Master Plan for the country, and basically leading the role in laying out the policy or the guidelines for the rest of the country to follow.
Or
I don't know if you anticipated in me saying that there are shortcomings. First of all, let me say, I haven't been in the CDA, so I don't know. There's obviously a lot of good that they probably do as well, so I can't speak on everything that they do. I do know that they carry out the mandate. They have developed a national drug master plan, so that is in place. The shortcomings that I and we as Doctors for Life believe that they are is that they've also not always put science first when in some of the policy decisions that they've made. I've been attending CDA meetings now already for the last 12 years, and I remember one of the very first ones I attended, I spoke to them very directly about certain policies that they wanted to implement, specific members on the CDA. And after the meeting, and they opposed the presentation quite clearly that we made at the CDA. And afterwards they came to me and said to me, no, you don't understand. South Africa, we're going to be different. We're going to do differently than the West. Yes, they do things like this in the West. They have certain policies there that are quite liberal and not science-based, by the way. But we're not going to do it like that. 10 years later, in the current National Drug Master Plan, we sit with those very policies inside. And we told them, we warned them, said this is what's going to happen. And we are very, very concerned about it. I can just use one example. And I know this is a controversial issue, but again, I say we come from a science background. And that is, for instance, methadone programs, where it's not being used to wean a drug addict. As doctors, there's a regime that is followed by our medical professionals to wean a drug addict off the drug. And it's normally on an outpatient basis, it's 21 days. Inpatients, it can be less. Now in Scotland, they call it being parking their drug addicts on methadone. In other words, it's a long-term program where the objective is no longer for the drug addict to reach abstinence and stopping the drug, but just keeping them on the drug. And methadone is also addictive. And so we don't believe that's the answer that this country should go into. If the West, most of the Western countries do it on an experimental level, and we are highly concerned about it as doctors, because remember, these patients come to our doctors. I believe that there's a lot of armchair medicine happening where academics make decisions, maybe with good intention, but not with evidence, not working with actual drug addicts. And that is my heart, is the drug addict themselves and the organization. Again, I say I represent the 1,500 doctors and Doctors for Life. On a provincial level, having been the chairperson of the KZN Substance Abuse Forum, I don't even know whether the Substance Abuse Forum in that province is active. It's been actually a bit of a disaster. I don't want to go into the detail because I'll have to mention names, and I'm not willing to do that now, but the whole program there basically collapsed, and I believe there's more that the CDA can do to influence the country. I think they have absolute an excellent and an amazing ability to really influence drug policy and the youth. But I think though we see them too little in the media. I think their policies at the moment are not guided by science, and I believe there's so much more that they can do. If you will allow me, I don't know what time I have left, but again, please cut me off when you have to, but the Dacha issue again, there was a window of opportunity for CDA to come out to warn the youth, to tell them, look, don't listen to the media. And the media drives a lot of this. And there is science behind that showing clearly that Dacha is harmful. And if you go and follow the debate in America and the states where it's been legalized, you'll see that there's a tremendous increase in young people now not feeling that Dacha is dangerous anymore, because that's what they read in the media. And the CDA can fill the role there. I remember warning them about things like that, seeing things being sold in the shops, even in the area where I stay. All of a sudden you get cannabis drinks. These are all things promoting the idea that Dacha is not as harmful, and this is just one example. And if you think that's going to end there, I'm afraid it's not. That's not the goal of the radical pushes of things like harm reduction programs in overseas. The eventual goal that they have is to legalize all drugs. And that is a huge concern for us because of the danger and because of the effect on the youth. It's going to destroy their lives. Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much. Morning, Mr. Clarkson. The National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 represents a multi-sectoral approach to create South Africa free from harm associated with drug use, misuse and abuse. The plan observes national and international policies, plans and conventions to ensure respect and dignity for all people in South Africa. So, if you are appointed as a board member, you will be expected to implement the authority's mandate. Share with us your understanding of the objectives of the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 and how you think the CDA should achieve them. You've got 8 minutes to answer me on that one.
Thank you for the question. Thank you. So, as I've mentioned, the National Drug Master Plan is there to serve as a guideline for the rest of the country to follow and when it comes to approaching how to deal with drug abuse. The implementation of that is obviously done through the different departments that's involved with in the case that I was involved with, the Substance Abuse Forums in each province. And from there, the National Drug Master Plan is rolled out to the rest of the organizations and so on. So there is a, I don't believe that structure is very effective at this stage, at least when I was chairperson of the KZN and Substance Abuse Forum. I think they did, the departments themselves did implement some of the things, but there were definitely issues that we had to deal with reporting and communication between us and the CDA. I can say to you that I do not agree, as I've been said, with everything, and the Doctors for Life do not agree with everything that is in the CDA or in the National Drug Master Plan as it stands. I don't believe that should be a problem either, because the reason why there is a National Drug Master Plan is because members have been invited from different spectrums to develop the National Drug Master Plan, and they come from different aspects. So I don't believe it's the purpose of the CDA members is to develop a National Drug Master Plan, which will be one of the functions that, if I'm selected, will have as well, is to play a role in that. And my goal and the goal of Doctors for Life would be to bring science to it. I mean, we have contact with some of the best experts in the world on these issues. I've mentioned one professor to you, Professor Bertha Madras. She's actually been the deputy director for the White House the last couple of years. I don't think she's at the moment, but a deputy director in demand reduction, for instance. And she's a scientist. She's running her own laboratory, and she does in the laboratory, they do science research on the adolescent brain and the influence that cannabis has on the adolescent brain. And these are the type of things that we would like to bring to the table. I've been to many of the CDA meetings where there were so-called scientists, and I think with the CDA, with all due respect to the previous CDA members, I think at some point it started looking to me like there was a core group driving most of it, except for the last CDA National Summit, a core group driving certain issues, and there wasn't, science wasn't being heard anymore about the harmfulness. I think so with all the good that they've done as well, I believe there's more that we can do. I think there's much at stake. I think the youth of South Africa is at stake. I think it should be an absolute focus point. In one interview with the SABC, they asked me, I was there with one of our members who's a specialist in internal medicine, and the issue was, again, cannabis. And the reporter, who was quite clearly biased against me, and the opposition, who was in Johannesburg, we were sitting in Durban, was the Dacha couple. I assume you know who that is. That was the couple that was driving for the legalization of cannabis, not just as recreational drug, but also in commercial trade, because they had a pending sentence against them, and Dr. Salaf was actually one of the, which you'll see in my CV, we were one of the, we joined the state against the legalization of Dacha. We were a separate party in this court case opposing this legalization, because that would just throw the floodgates open. Anyway, this reporter was quite biased and friends with the Dacha couple asked me, yeah, but aren't you creating a nanny state if you tell people what they can do and what they can't do? Now, I said to him, look, if you think that legalizing Dacha is going to help the young people of South Africa, you are badly mistaken. It's not going to help our youth. It's going to throw them into a more of a bigger hell, if I can say it like that, because the evidence is clear. Dropouts in school, dropouts in university. One of the largest studies ever done, and it was a longitudinal study, I think of 38 years, showed that there's a decline of up to 8 points in IQ average on people who use Dacha long term. Now, can you imagine what that's going to do on our youth and then the rest of the economy in South Africa? And I would like to challenge one area that I think we should be really involved with the CDA is with research in South Africa, which is not, yes, there is very good research by Sekendu, but take the last few horrific traffic accidents that happened in South Africa that we, most of us, are aware about. I would like those drivers to be tested for Dacha use, because, as you know, the Constitutional Court has made a decision that you can now grow Dacha in your backyard. These things are going to have dire consequences on our country in the future. Maybe we won't see it immediately, but in Colorado, and I've given this to the CDA last year, it is very clear that in the states where Dacha was decriminalized or legalized fully, there was a huge jump, not just in all motor vehicle accidents that were fatal, in other words, somebody died, but specifically in the testing of Dacha in those motor vehicle accidents. It climbed up. It's a very well-known study by the Rocky Mountain high-intensity area reports that they do. It's an independent report. So it's an independent report, by the way. It's not by a specific group of people. There are many other things that's happening there that's also of concern. Hospitalization is going up. Specifically, emergency admissions of under 5-year-olds is going up in the emergency departments and hospitals. I've mentioned dropouts in schools. People, because part of smoking Dacha and using Dacha, whether you say it's for medicine or not, it doesn't matter. If you use the biological plant as a medicine, it's a danger.
Thank you, Mr. Clarkson. My next question to you is, prior to the review of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017, a need to conduct an evaluation was prioritized to assess how it was implemented. But subsequently, the Department of Planning and Monitoring commissioned the implementation evaluation to the National Drug Master Plan 2070 as part of the National Evaluation System in partnership with the Department of Social Development. The evaluation did take place in August 2015 and January 2016. So my question to you is, what were the key findings and recommendations of the National Drug Master Plan 2013 to 2070, the implementation evaluation? That's right.
Sorry, I do know that Doctors for Life was involved in the process. Obviously, we gave our submission on points that we felt that was of great concern in the National Drug Master Plan. I do not have them in front of me. It was a while ago. But we highlighted the concerns that we have had about the National Drug Master Plan at that time. And in fact, since I've been involved with the KZN Substance Abuse Forum, we've been actively involved in engaging with regards to the National Drug Master Plan up to the point of the recent one, which we only saw after it was approved by Parliament. Now, I don't know the official findings that were made. As I said, I only know of the findings that we made as Doctors for Life, and we presented those to the CDA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Klassen. I would like to find out from you, what is your understanding about good governance, and then if it happens that you are appointed to serve in the CDA board, how are you going to ensure that good governance has been practiced in the board? Thanks.
So obviously the CDA, it's 13 members, I think, that will be part of the group. So obviously there will be a voting process and a democratic voting process about some of the issues. I feel the good governance part is to, first of all, keep the drug addict and their families and South Africa's future in the back of your mind with any decision that's made. It may never become armchair medicine. In other words, disconnected from what's really happening in the rural areas where I live, in the cities, and where youth are at the moment experimenting with drugs, and where families are destroyed because of that. Good governance is good governance for the country. Now, some of the people might not like the governance that you give, and I don't think it's the aim of the CDA is not to please everybody. It's not to please the drug addict per se in their state of in need of help. It is for the better of the country and the future of the country. Good governance is obviously being open, being honest, and keeping that main goal in mind, and that no personal objective or how can I say that, that my personal ambitions may never become the thing that drives me in saying certain things as a CDA member, whether in public or in the CDA meetings. It should be always with that in mind, that we are talking about people's lives. We are talking about a country that is at the moment in really difficult circumstances with regards to drug abuse and many other things, but that's the portfolio within the CDA. And it does influence everything else. It does influence the economy. It does influence the future of the family structure. It influences the way we look at things. And I believe that it's important to always never lose that perspective, that there's a greater thing in mind.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Klassen, the next question. What are the key issues affecting young people, their families and communities regarding drug and substance abuse? How would you advise the government to deal with these issues? Also 3 minutes.
It's not the popular approach to it, but I do believe the government does not act as a nanny state when it makes decisions to protect the country. Take COVID-19, for example. The government played a huge role. They made a decision, having certain knowledge. They'd said, look, the people don't all have this knowledge. We do have it, and we do have to act upon it, and therefore certain lockdown regulations were put in place. I don't think anybody called the government a nanny state while doing so. Yet I get this argument when sitting in front of pro-legalizing of drug groups, saying, yeah, but now we're becoming a nanny state where the government tells you what you can do and what you can't do. I think there's a wise way of going about it, but I think the youth should be the main focus. The youth, because they concrete operators. In other words, they feel that they are kind of invincible. They can make decisions and it doesn't have any negative outcomes, you know, and they live for the now, they live for passion, they live for emotional, you know, what gain they can get right now. Whereas an adult is more objective. You start thinking, looking at options, say, well, look, the outcome of this, the long term, is not going to be beneficial for me, for my family, for my children, and therefore he makes different decisions. Now, we cannot leave these decisions for the youth to make them. We have a responsibility as the adults to make laws and to put things in place to protect our youth. Up till the point that they come to the decision where they can say, oh, you know, I never liked what my parents told me, but or the government for that, but it was for my best interest. Wearing helmets or seatbelts in public, for example. The government made the decision that it does protect lives. And so whether you like it or not, they do expect you to wear a seatbelt, and there is a fine. So I believe the youth have many different challenges at this stage. They grow up, many grow up in a society where there is the joblessness is very great in South Africa. I think that is a huge challenge. That could be something, although that's maybe not the CDA's role to deal with that. I think they should recognize, and I think they do, and partner with other groups that to help to keep that in mind when they make decisions. I'm sorry to say, but the media and the entertainment industry plays a huge role in whether young people use drugs or not. I think there's much more that should be done, and I hear the cries of the media that always complains about freedom of speech whenever you want to clamp down. But look, child pornography is also not legal. It doesn't infringe their freedom of speech to cut them back and say, look, if you're promoting drug use in South Africa, whether through films, music, whatever, is to step down and say, no, wait, hang on, we're not going to allow this because it's damaging our youth. Wish I had more time.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Clausen, in your opinion, what is the state of public rehabilitation centers in the country? Are there any challenges with regard to the access to public rehabilitation center in South Africa? If yes, what are those challenges and how would you advise the security, the country, to address those challenges?
Thank you. I appreciate that question because it's something actually I think about often. So while I was working in the KZN Substance Abuse Forum, that there were many challenges with them. I feel the government, now let me put it differently, some of the social workers being, you know, they focus, and look, I'm not doing a blame game here, but they, some of them, it's just a job for them. And I think there was too much focus sometimes in trying to clamp down on certain rehab centers for what they're not doing, instead of rather for them to approaching these rehab centers and say, look, we see this is not part of the minimum norms and standards that you're supposed to implement. But we as government need every single rehab center that's effective that we can muster, because we have a huge problem. And so rather than just saying, look, close doors, they must come with the approach of, look, we are here to come and say what's wrong with this building and whether there's things that we're not happy with, but we're coming here to help you because we want you to succeed. We want you to do, and we as government can. I know the government subsidized some rehab centers, and maybe get funding to help those rehab centers that maybe are not complying with the physical needs that some of them, the minimum norms of standards that they have, that they need, but that the social worker has the discernment to see that even though the room is not the exact same size. That's one example. I know of a rehab center, they wanted to close them down just because the room wasn't exactly, let's say, 5 square meters, it was 4.5 or something. I mean, that's the thing I'm talking about, and there are many examples like this. Instead of saying that, but actually these people are helping drug addicts, let's try and see how we can help them as government, even with funding, just to get them to meet those minimum norms and standards that they can carry on, because we truly need as many rehab centers that we can get. And I think there's too little emphasis on rehabilitation. I think there's too lax rules within some rehab centers. And that can also be, that for me would be the more critical thing to look at when looking at rehab centers and helping rehab centers to develop approach to actually help drug addicts, not the size of the room or how many toilets there are. I'm sorry, I'm just being honest with you. The government can help with those things, I believe, and funding should go in that direction. But that was my impression sitting at the forum chair and listening to social development and the Department of Health and listening to the complaints of the rehab centers was, it's like they were not working together. And many of them see the government as just wanting to clamp down instead of helping. And I feel there's an area we really need better guidance for the rehab centers and almost encouraging more. Maybe I can just end with this. I don't know what my time is, but you know that the NGO sector gives the largest amount of rehabilitation in this country, not government, and that's why. But government can help them and encourage them. And I know there's some of the provinces, Western Cape, I believe, has got good policies with that.
Mr. Glasson, one of the challenges facing the country is the lack of comprehensive national statistics on the prevalence of substance and drug abuse. How can the CGA play a role in this regard?
Definitely they can. I've also asked the question about some of the statistics. I've mentioned one example, for instance, our road traffic statistics now, specifically with Dacha being allowed to be planted at Joham, although I think Parliament hasn't made a final decision on the change law that a constitutional court required. But I definitely feel the CDA can be more proactive there. I'm not aware that the CDA in the past have been involved with leading and advising on specific research that they need, other than just always getting the statistics that they could find from, for instance, organizations like Sekendu. I, for example, asked many years ago for the Department of Social Development back in at KZN when I was chairperson there. I said to the person who was then the representative for the social development at the forum, are there any research showing, for instance, opiate overdose, actual overdose and deaths in the hospitals, in clinics, or at home on the death certificates? And he said, no, nothing. I said, now how is it possible that the CDA can come up with statistics like that? Because as many of them, it's guesswork. They take a sample and then multiply it by so many and then try and come up with a figure. Now, why is this important? Why? Because one of the reasons why some groups want to implement, for instance, needle exchange programs and shooting places where people can go and actually shoot their drugs up in a specific location is because they say it actually brings down mortality and overdose. But they don't know. And the way that they work out these statistics is that the more people who come for clean needles, the more they say there's a need for more clean needles. And it's just like a never-ending cycle. That's not science. That's guesswork. They actually don't know because the statistics are not being done. And what I'm afraid of, and this is what we've been seeing overseas where some of these programs are implemented, once they're implemented, the only thing they report back on is saying, no, our program went wonderful because we handed out 5 million clean needles last year. And that's all they report, and that's their statistics. But they don't tell you, and they can't, of how many drug addicts actually stopped using the drug, which should be our main goal. In fact, another thing they then start doing is that they start saying that prevention, they now start including prevention and put it under the same umbrella and saying prevention is part of the programs. And then if prevention is doing good, then they take the compliment towards the needle exchange programs, for instance, or handing out free methadone or things like that. And the two are completely separate. Prevention is preventing a person from taking a drug. When you actually give them the tool to use the drug and say that you want them to do it safer, that's harm reduction. That is not prevention. And we should maximize prevention by minimizing, we should maximize prevention.
Mr. Klassen, I've listened to you attentively when you talk about the decriminalization of marijuana for personal use. Now my question, and this one for you, will be, if you will be a successful candidate for CDA, for the board, and the view of the board and the personal use of this drug is overruling your view, what will you do in that instance?
That's a very good question. I don't know. Obviously, the CDA, as I said, have 13 members, and if they vote on a certain issue, that's what the rest of the committee will go by. I do believe that by bringing science, my duty will be, in what I can only speak of what my duty can be, is to bring the science to the table, to bring evidence of what we see in other countries where things are being felt. I don't believe we should just carry on and doing what the West does. I truly don't. I believe we are, this is Africa, this is South Africa, we are an individual nation, we've got our own challenges and wonderful things for our country that they can learn from us. I believe we should set the example. I don't believe whether we should always just feel that we should, you know, they're the larger nation and therefore we should follow them. But as, in my role as the CDA, I believe I should do my utter best to bring truth, the truth and knowledge and science to the table. But what the CDA decide, obviously I can't determine that. I'll have to go by with the decision, even though it's against my personal maybe knowledge about the aspect. That's the decision that the CDA will make. But I, you know, in being in the role as a CDA member, obviously I have the opportunity to, if people believed in a certain way just because they read it in the media and they've been influenced in that way, and to bring science to the table, is to tell them the truth, and then hopefully they will change their mind and see and know that this is actually harmful to the youth. And so that will be my continual goal. I'm not going to back down on what I know is the truth just because a decision by the CDA has been made in a different direction and then just go with that. I don't believe that is, that's not consistent in science either.
So, Mr. Klassen, during the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown, some regulations were introduced which led to the ban of alcohol and tobacco sales in the country. how do you advise the country to deal with the sale of alcohol in particular during epidemic in the future?
Assuming that the pandemic will carry on. Look, that's a really difficult question, and no political leader, no one wants to, I think, speak without thinking that through thoroughly. The evidence showed that the banning had a huge positive influence in the country. I mean, nobody can deny it. A crime went down, and the moment it was reintroduced, it went up again. I think there's much more that can be done. We as Doctors for Life don't have a specific policy on alcohol. I mean, I can tell you how I personally feel about it, although I don't think this is the forum to do that. But the fact is that the evidence showed that these things were very, very positive. And to ignore it, we can't ignore it either. I'm not saying that alcohol should be banned completely, but I also don't think we should ignore it. It's there. To ignore it would be ignore the evidence. And so I don't know. I think it has to be approached with wisdom. But there were many things that was learned during the COVID-19 pandemic, specifically related to drug use. And may I just say, this is why myself and Doctors for Life find it illogical and irrational for people who want to legalize other drugs or decriminalize them to now, after seeing the devastation of our current, because many times they come with this argument, they say, yeah, but alcohol is legal and cigarettes is legal. Why not legalize other drugs? Why, that's not being fair. And we say, look, if you think for the sake of being consistent to legalize another harmful drug, another pandemic in the country, is the right way to go, that's illogical. That doesn't make sense. Just for the sake of being consistent now, legalizing other drugs. And specifically when you look at the harm that alcohol is doing in the country, it doesn't make sense. Why do we want more harm? So I'm saying two things. I think we should, some of the things we've learned about alcohol, I don't think it should be ignored. I don't know in what extent, but there is much to have been learned by that, the availability, the promotion of it, the adverts promoted, everything else promoted. And our children sit with all this flood of information that come to them. And if their parents, unfortunately, are not going to warn them about it, as some parents don't, whether they're absent or whatever, then those children sit in a very difficult position.
Any question? Pardon? Thank you very much. Thank you. Have a good day. We thank you for this decent and mutual, similarly productive participation. Thank you very much, Mr. Klassen. We can release you. Thank you.
To have been here, and I appreciate it very much. And may God be with you as well with the decisions that you have to make and the role that you play. It's no small thing in the position that you sit, and you need wisdom and everything as well. So my heart goes out to you as well. I mean, you have a larger role in a certain sense than we have, but may we not forget the goal.
You're welcome.